programs and different things that we have went and said, hey, there's just not enough to serve our blind people the way that they should be served here in Nebraska. So those are the two primary sources. And then there's two others that come, and it's not guaranteed. We get most years, not all years, we get what they call reallotment dollars. So in other words, like that Missouri example, their state did not match the federal dollars. So other states that do have funds available can go for what they call reallotment dollars. And because our state gives us more than just the federal match dollars, we're able to use those dollars to match reallotment dollars. And you know, some years it's over $1 million. I know a couple of years ago when I think there was a hurricane or something, the federal government decided not to reallot dollars, and whatever excess reallotment dollars they had went to help the hurricane. And then the fourth area we get funding is Social Security reimbursement dollars. And I may not be saying that exactly right, but we get when we take people off of SSDI or SSI and help them become gainfully employed, Social Security rewards us as kind of an incentive for helping people be gainfully employed. And our state does a really good job there too, for two reasons. One, we get people working gainfully, and that's great. And then second, we do a good job of trying to get those Social Security dollars. So every year we start out with a budget, and that's based on the federal dollars and then the state dollars. And then the two unknowns are sometimes the reallotment dollars and then the Social Security disability dollars. But another thing that we have to watch is carryover dollars. We can't just accumulate money and not spend it. So we do a good job of trying to always have a plan to make sure that we invest the money that we have and not lose it. You know, I think any dollar that we spend on vocational rehabilitation, older blind, transitional services is a great investment and a great return. So there are several reports that we get. A couple of them kind of just show you where we spend all our money. But there's one report that I particularly really like. It's the one that it has like what our budget is, and each month it tells us what our actual spending is, and then it tells us how much money we have left over. Let's say for the sake of discussion, we started out with $6.5 million this year, and we're spending $400,000 every month. You know, you take that times 12 and say, well, that's almost $5 million. We're not overspending our money. We're not necessarily underspending our money. But it is important that we know that we have enough funds available and not overspend our budget. Or also we don't underspend, because it's important that we... Those are investment dollars, as far as I'm concerned. So every dollar that we invest is a great return. So I know in the last year or two, because of we've gotten reallotment dollars and Social Security dollars, we've been able to invest a little bit more money in like the MBE program and buy vending machines, and that's a great investment. So it helps. You know, create jobs and helps our blind vendors make more money. But as commissioners, we do have a responsibility to know where we're at budget wise. A couple of years ago, we had the year when we couldn't bank on any reallotment dollars, and we'd always been getting them. So we, to some extent, we we were anticipating our budget based on reallotment dollars that weren't guaranteed. And did we ever get into trouble? No, because one, we recognized that issue ahead of time. When it was discovered that we were not going to get reallotment dollars, we had to do some difficult decisions. We closed some offices. We had to lay some people off, and that was because of that. That's the reason we had to do that. And, you know, now we're, you know, we're doing good again. And but you know, as long as since Kat's been our financial person, she does an outstanding job of letting us know where we're at, you know, actual spending versus budget. And you know, normally every month I'll look at it and I'll just kind of look at where we're at, and I'll either say, why did we spend more money this month? Or it looks like we're right on track for spending. Or if we have a dip in spending, I say, you know, are we going to spend some more money on transitional services this summer and, you know, increase our spending? Because not all spending can be, you know, divided out by 12 months. You know, like a lot of our transition dollars are spent in the summer because that's when, you know, we're able to spend more time and resources with, you know, the transition age clients. So that's kind of what I got on budget. If you guys want to have a separate focus topic on the budget, or if you want me to go over the documents sometimes, please let me know. But it is important. Carlos, were you going to say something?
Pardon me?
Carlos, did you have anything to add? I thought I heard your voice, but about budget.
What? No, I didn't say anything, but I keep thinking a lot about what to say. About the budget, all I can say is originally the commissioners when we were formed, the commission board, and Barbara can attest to this, decided to make sure that the board members were not going to micromanage and therefore didn't engage much on the budget and the finances. But maybe 8 years or so ago, the state auditors, because we are a commission, they made a strong recommendation that the commission board needs to get all our budget, you know, reports, this huge spreadsheet that the CAT puts together for purposes of transparency. You don't have to read all of those because, to be truthful, only accountants on numbers and who have a lot of time will look each single line. But at least what Mark is saying, it's what the auditors were recommending. But we are kind of mandated to share that with you, and you can do with that information what you desire as a group. But that information wasn't provided before. Now we are doing that. That's one. The other Mark is, even though we were quote-unquote able to match the federal dollars, we didn't have enough state funding. What we were doing a lot was doing in-kind contribution or soft money from the state. But the Attorney General Office will say, okay, we support the Commission for the Blind so many times per year, so this is around $20,000. The accounting department, we support them, this is about $100,000. And so on. So then we had to do different things, and we were able to match, but we didn't get all the state funds that we needed. And when we were not a commission, the director didn't come to ask for a budget to the unicameral because we were under that huge department. The director of HHS came and put the request, but the director of this little tiny agency couldn't do that. now as a commission, we are able to do that. But also, consumers come to testify. So back then, I think I was looking at the numbers, and in the state budget, we only got $260,000. Nothing for OIB, nothing for IAO. For OIB was mainly just soft money. And now we are getting $2.1 million from the state altogether. And that's again thanks to the partnership and the fact that we are a commission. And of course, money comes with accountability, and we can talk more about that. But in regards to the budget, that's what I wanted to add, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Carlos. And I will say that well, just a personal observation. We're fortunate that Kat is very, very, she understands the numbers very good. Not that her predecessor didn't either, but she's on top of things. She's always quick to respond when you have questions. And if you don't understand things, she will provide the additional information. And as commissioners, our job is not to micromanage or decide where they spend money, but just have an overall sense of, are we going to be all right? Are we going to run out of money? I think of it as a consumer. I look at every dollar we spend as an investment. And, you know, are we investing the money? You'd be amazed how many different groups get into trouble because they don't spend their money. And that's not good either, because then you're wasting opportunities. It's not like we've got the money, we need to spend it foolishly, but we've got the money, let's put it to the best possible use. And, you know, we certainly try to do that. Carlos is always thinking about, well, this year maybe we've got more money that we can maybe do more training for staff. That's important. Or this year we're going to be able to have a staff meeting in person because of COVID and other things, we weren't able to do that in the past year or two. So those are all things that Carlos and Carol and Kat, they look at to make sure that we're investing each dollar to the best of our abilities. So and again, I think we do a good job. There's a healthy balance that we always have some carryover dollars, just because sometimes the funding doesn't always come in and like we think it will in the timing. So so that's pretty much all I have to say about budgeting at this point. Again,
if I'd like to add just one more part, okay. Like I mentioned earlier, our overall grant from both federal and state is close to $5.3 million, okay? But you will see many times that we have around $6.5 million, and that's because we got real LATMAN and Social Security funds. Social Security reimbursement, we have to spend that right away as soon as we get it. So that's usually, these days we're using it for OIB services. The real LATMAN, we are trying to ask as much as we can get, but because many states are sending money back, we are getting more than what we usually can spend. So this year, out of $1.5 million that we got, I think we are going to be sending back around 700 pounds. But that's just, it's not that we don't know how to spend the money, but that we spend 800 pounds above the 5.3 that we are budgeted for the year. Mm-hmm. But we did took advantage of the real government.
Mm-hmm. Well, very, very good. Well, thank you, Carlos. And and the other thing I'm always amazed, I know it's the first of the month when I see an email from Kat. She gets that report out know, right as the month is over or the new month is beginning. So, but the other, one other thing I do have, because a lot of times I went and testified on some of the additional fundings for like older blind or transition. I will, you know, we just don't have a pot of money that we can spend however we want. You know, we have to spend 15% of our money on transition services, but I might call Carlos and say, okay, we've got all this money in older blind. Are we spending what we promised we were going to spend on older blind? And of course he knows right away where they're at, what his plan is. But, you know, it's important that we be accountable to the state when we ask for more funding. That we say we're going to do something with that money, we need to do it specifically with that money. So, that's all I got. How about Kim? Are you ready? Where you can talk about the
sure.
role of commissioners and our job description?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. So we'll just start with the job description, and I'm gonna just kind of go through. I know that Kathy had sent an email that had these listed, and they're also in the commissioner packet that's on the secure data storage. But basically, part of our job duties are to seek and employ an executive director, and we have an annual evaluation, usually in May, of the executive director. And along with that, we, when we do that in May, we also approve the time records for the executive director. Basically, what that says is we're going to keep following the same procedure that we have been. So Carlos sends us his PAR, and they're automatically approved unless, you know, somebody responds with questions. And so we vote on that during that eval. And then another thing we vote on during the evaluation, it usually is to continue with the process of having the executive director authorize out-of-state travel for commission staff. So, for example, if for some reason a staff member needs to go within 60 miles of our borders or whatever to go to come some kind of an appointment or something with a consumer or something like that, Carlos is able to approve all of that travel. So that's just an example. Let's see. So the next thing is we provide guidance to the executive director and things like that, just kind of guidance and making sure that kind of the things that are happening that we know of are just following the mission statement of the commission. And let's see what else. We want to make sure that we're seeking input from consumers, from staff members. And then we also are responsible. Part of our job duties are to approve rules, policies, and things that are adopted by NCBVI. So please feel free to jump in if I'm not being complete enough or needs a better description. So also we need to have a working knowledge of the Rehabilitation Act and other rules and regulations that are important to know regarding daily operations of NCBVI. Let's see. It's our responsibility to be a liaison between the public and NCBVI.
Yeah.
Let's see. We also hold annual elections for the commission board for the officers on the board. And I'll talk about those roles in a little bit here. It's also one in our job description to attend and participate in as many NCBVI functions as possible, and being interact with as much of the staff as possible. Let's see. And so the next thing is, and you guys have probably already noticed a lot of this, you're going to receive and need to read and respond to different emails or reports or things like that that you receive, and make sure, and like the budget, for example, and Carl's also send the executive director report, and just all of those things that you get, you need to make sure that we need to make sure that we are responding to those, and then also asking questions or requesting additional material if needed, just to clarify things. It's our responsibility also to respond to questions from the public and staff. And then with part of that, it's important to seek input or from like an appropriate staff person, just to make sure that the information that you're sharing is up to date and accurate. Let's see. And then the next item, it's in regard to, like, I'm trying to think of how to describe this. If there are any personnel issues, we don't get involved with those. There is like a specific procedure like the state has, but if there were some unresolved personnel issue, Carlos may share a report kind of describing the situation and any possible resolution, or if there's any change in policy because of that, you know, that kind of thing, and share that information. And the purpose of that is like seeking so that we can provide guidance, but really we don't have any say in those like personnel issues. Let's see. I think I might have forgotten something. Okay. So also, we can make suggestions or recommendations, things that might help with improve like daily operations, or things that might improve the ability for NCBVI staff to adhere to our mission statement, I guess is kind of what I'm thinking. So we definitely, you know, we meet as a board, we communicate as a body, and like vote on things, and
Sorry about that. I
want to
mute too.
Oh no, you're okay. And so and when we do that, what I read in was that there are signatures that are needed when we vote as a body from the chairperson. And Mark, I don't know if that's correct, but please give input if it isn't. And then also as an individual, if we share something or talk about if we talk about something related to the commission or operations or anything like that, and we talk about it as an individual, we need to make sure that we say that, you know, whatever we're sharing is like our thoughts on whatever, and that we're not representing the commission board. Let's see. Okay, so, and it's also our responsibility to make sure that we're keeping the commissioner info packet up to date so that it can be used as like training material for future commissioners. And and it's also our responsibility as commissioners to help familiarize new commissioners with kind of that commissioner packet and the process of any processes or things like reimbursement, not reimbursement, per diem, things like that. And I know we've already talked about per diem in an email thread, so I won't really go through that unless anybody has questions. But we need to remember that really we do represent the commission, and we want to make sure we're doing that in a positive way. Let's see. I think I covered everything. Is there anything that you can think of that I missed?
No.
Oh, confidentiality. Whoops, sorry. There's one thing I did forget. There are times that some information may be shared in confidentiality, like in our commissioner packet or some other things. We just need to make sure that we are respecting that confidentiality and not sharing things that really we are not to share. So I think I got pretty much everything, Mark.
I think you did a nice job, Kim. I'm just going to add just a couple maybe some support. As Kimberly said, a key responsibility is to hire an executive director. And 4 years ago, I got to go through that process. And that, talk about a big responsibility. When they say that the commission board is responsible for hiring the executive director, that's exactly what happens. There's nobody else. We can go to like HR, get some advice on, the practices, but the board truly does do the search, the interviewing, and the decision. I was fairly new when that happened a few years ago, but I was fortunate at the time that the chair at that time, Mike, did an awesome job of just kind of taking the lead on that. And Robert was on that commissioner at that time too, and we really, really did take it seriously, and we did a nationwide search, and we just didn't pick Carlos because he was on staff. He earned the right to be the executive director based on, it was evident throughout the process that he truly was the most qualified, prepared, and capable guy, and I have never once regretted that decision since then. And I didn't really know Carlos before that, so it was something that it was really neat to see the commission board really work together and make a decision. And hopefully we don't have to do that too many times, but should that time come, I'm confident that the commission board will do their very best. So, so that's pretty much job duties. Linda or Cheryl, do you have any questions at this point?
I kind of wanted to ask something about confidentiality, but I'm not quite sure how to ask it. Say somebody would come to us, say a staff person of the commission, and confide in us about something, say a job related thing or whatever, do we just use our own discretion as to whether or not we share that information with the board, or are those types of things not to be shared with anyone, including the board?
Well, that's a good question, Cheryl. I would say, like in anything, there is discretion and discernment. Kind of what how I look at it is you know, I don't go out, you know, seeking, you know, a lot of feedback or approvals or things, but I am always willing to listen, always try to make myself available. I guess it depends on the circumstances. You have to decide, well, is this just kind of like a personal opinion type things, or is this affecting the quality of services? Is this going to lead to bad morale? Just, you know, follow your instincts. I would say if there's anything that you just don't know for sure, then, you know, maybe talk to another commissioner. Carlos's phone is always available. Err on the side of what's best for the Commission for the Blind and the blind consumers. That is challenging. Yeah, most times when people come up to you and say something like that, they genuinely do care, and you know, sometimes just listening is a powerful tool as a commissioner. Do you have to run right away on every little thing? No, but I would say if it's something that's important to the commission, you know, Carlos would be the person I would call. And you know, Carlos is a professional. He looks at it from a number of different angles. But I would expect that from any executive. But I wouldn't say, okay, well, such and such, I wouldn't kind of communicate that concern to other people, that, you know, you need to kind of filter it and, you know, don't go back. If I heard a complaint from a staff person, I wouldn't go back to an ACB meeting and say, boy, you know, I heard this from such and such person, and boy, you know, they got issues. I would never do that.
No.
But, I don't, Kim, you got any thoughts on it?
No, I agree with kind of what you were saying. Just I've never had that happen. So I guess I would just say reach out to Carlos.
Yeah, and he's going to handle it as a professional. And like by Carol and Kat. And, you know, there is kind of like a chain of command. I don't think we need to be, you know, our contact is Carlos, and he's our point. Technically, he reports to us, and I know he won't consider it a bother. He'll take it, and whether that's Carlos or any executive director, I mm-hmm. think, you know, we can't get in there and mediate problems between staff people or
right.
different agent or different parts of the agency. That surely is Carlos's job to handle anything that's... what do you think, Carlos?
I agree. I've been in some situations in which some commissioners call me, and some in which they don't, and it depends. most of staff members to have good intentions. Some, even when they have good intentions, don't realize that they start getting into playing games or get victims of somebody who is manipulating the situation. Your role is critical when you are listening to that, because you have to listen, but yeah, evaluate the situation and talk to the person that have you talked to your supervisor, have you talked to Carlos. Because there were few situations in which people are close to commissioners and they don't even want to talk to their supervisors or me, they just call the commissioners thinking that you will come and say, do this. And that's not your role, neither mine. Like Mark said, there is a chain of command. It, as director, people don't call me directly. Say, Carlos, I have a complaint with this. They tell the supervisor to do that. I tell them, well, talk to your supervisor first. And then the deputy did it. There is a change of command, you know. Carol is on the phone too, and she knows my way of operating things. They need to respect the change of command. We don't get very strict because we don't want people to feel like they cannot come to me either. You know? Mm-hmm. But they need to talk to their supervisor first. Otherwise, can get out of hand. But in general, I think people do have good intent.
Yeah. You know, I guess I'll just add one other thing on that. And it kind of goes both ways. Like, if we have concerns or questions, you know, we need to bring them to Carlos and not kind of do our own investigative reporting and and ask, and you're like, Nancy or Connie or somebody, you know, that's not our role, you know. If it's, you know, Carlos's job is to kind of respond to our concerns, and there is a good way, and we can't overstep our role. Linda, did you have any questions, or Cheryl, do you have any other questions?
I do, actually, Mark.
Okay, go ahead, Linda.
You and I talked a little bit about this. I guess a little background on this. I think, had I known what the job